Instant replay. Hi, I'm Siobhan Sarna, founder of SIBO SOS and the creator of about 10 summits now. Right now we're airing or about to air Lymphatic Rescue Summit. I'm here with my dear friend, Steve Wright. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Siobhan.
Who is one of the first people I ever learned about gut health from online ages and ages ago. And he is truly an innovator. He's an engineer by trade, had tons of gut issues, and has gone through the full spectrum of like hacking the system for your health, trying innovative things, sharing that information with friends, family, and his online community. And sorry, my Ring doorbell is going crazy because the squirrels are going nuts in the backyard. And what we're going to be talking today is about is one of his areas of expertise, which is leaky gut. So Steve, people are probably like, I've seen Steve, I've heard of Steve, or I've never heard of this dude. Would you give me a little bit of your, you know, thumbprint and your 411 real quick so people can understand your story?
Yeah, sure. So I've had gut issues from birth. I have a lot of the risk factors. I grew up in the Midwest. We didn't, you know that antibiotics were bad or that McDonald's and Costco frozen pizzas were bad. And I had a very stressful college life that kind of resembled Animal House, but not that aggressive. And then after college, I was working for a big four accounting firm. I thought I had my dream job, and my coworker, I was having all kinds of digestive pains and problems. I was having my first panic attacks, depression episodes that were very dark, massive bloating that would make me cry every day. And coming from the Midwest, I was told to just suck this up, and that, you know, this is just part of being a man. You can push your way through that. But then after a few accidents on some commuter buses and some other canceled dates, my coworkers complained about my farting in the office, and my boss basically threatened my job. And so that made me seek support finally from Western medicine. They ruled out celiac disease. And because I have a family history of IBS, they basically just said, hey, you have IBS, suck it up, have some more whole grains, Metamucil. You can have more antibiotics if you want, but I'd already had 4 years of those and ended up in the hospital due to that. So I was actually anti-antibiotics back then because of what my experience was. So that led me, luckily, through a fraternity brother of mine and my best friend, or one of my best friends, Jordan Reisner. He led me to a specific carbohydrate diet, and that immediately impacted my gas and bloating. And between the pain and the anger and the rage, actually more like rage that I had, I decided clearly no one cares about my pain more than me. So therefore, I'm going to have to do something about this. And I was trained in electrical engineering, which is basically trying to solve complex systems where you don't really know all the variables and you can't really touch and see everything. And so how can this really be all that different? If I can just find people with expertise and have had issues like mine, I should be able to reverse engineer this. And so that's led me on a over 13-year experience now, where I was trained in functional medicine under Dan Kalish. I already was a sort of an extreme tester on myself. I've been using supplements for performance enhancement and brain enhancement since I was 13. So I was already used to ordering stuff from Russia and Asia and just trying random substances that have no data on them on myself. And so after many years of trying to help people with leaky gut and the specific carbohydrate diet and FODMAPs and all these different diets, and after actually having a clinic as well and seeing like over 350 people, I got disillusioned with all of this because I realized that my pain wasn't going away in certain instances, and that I realized that diet and supplements can't do it all. And so I went on a 3 or 4 year walkabout into trauma and emotional healing and psychedelics and somatic body work and neurofeedback and all kinds of other crazy things. And, you know, like the alchemist, I ended up back where I started and realized that that diet and supplements do really matter. And so does trauma and emotional work. And so at that point, I realized that still no one had innovated in the gut health space the way that I wanted it to be done. And I needed certain products for my own healing. And so Healthy Gut was reborn. And here we are today.
All right. And so Steve is, if you've ever come to a session with Steve before, you know how smart he is and how supportive he is. And you also know that he created his own line of supplements because he couldn't find them out in the marketplace and they're quite different. But we're going to talk about some things that could help you, you know, towards the end. But right now we're going to talk about leaky gut. And so let's go like beginner's mind and just tell us what it is. So, you know, when you go to your doctor, some people will say leaky gut doesn't exist. And then if you say, well, it's intestinal permeability, doc, and believe me, I'm not bashing doctors, I'm pro doc, I'm pro smart docs who stay up to date with the research. So intestinal permeability, let's start there. And just if you could take us through that primer.
Yeah. And just in case you're wondering, like, who is this guy? Jordan and I had some of the first articles about intestinal permeability and leaky gut. We had one of the first courses ever about it. And so this has been a fascination of mine for over 8 years now. In general, there's a myth out there that, you know, your gut is either open or closed. Like it's either working or it's not working. And that's not really true. The gut is a very chaotic environment. And in fact, there's one cell, your skin is 7 layers thick. There's only one layer of gut cells. And that layer of cells has to be able to open and close due to whatever's happening in your life. If you are in extreme heat environment or like a marathoner, you actually will open your cells on purpose and flood stuff out of your body in order to lower body temperature and keep you alive. There are other cases of that as well. Medicine is still trying to figure it out. But in other words, the gut uses this one layer of cells on purpose to help keep us alive. But in general, majority of the time, 99.9% of the time, those cells should be closed and the capacity to open and close those cells should be intact because your absorption of nutrients and the keeping out of toxins and broken down proteins or fats or carbohydrates, it's supposed to go through the cell. So if each one of my fingers is a cell, the nutrients are supposed to go through it, intracellular, that's how it works. That's how it's supposed to work. Paracellular is between the cells, and that's where the leaky gut happens. And so 99% of the time, that's like this, the nutrients are going in and we're rejecting all the not digested properly foods, like he hasn't been enzymes, haven't worked yet, or whatever. It's just not time for those to go in. We don't want any toxins or LPS in there. Leaky gut is when you basically lose that open and closing mechanism. And now you're just kind of, maybe you're wide open, maybe you're slightly open, maybe there's certain patches of your intestine that are kind of, you've lost that open and closing. And now anything can go right into the bloodstream. And it can go right into that immune system. We've talked on other shows about how right packed around that wall, because it's like a circle, and then you have one line of cells all the way around, and right outside of that circle is your immune system
the world to see.
Yeah, like 70-80% of your immune cells are right there.
So you're talking about the tube, the lumen, the intestine.
Yeah.
Steve, analogous to say that like the tissue in our mouths, you know, when you brush your teeth and you get the blood, like it's like that one layer thick. I mean, and also it's the opposite end of the tube. So it kind of like makes sense in my brain about that, but it's that thin.
Yeah. I mean, I can't actually speak about the mouth or the oral cavity. I'm not an expert on that. I don't know if it is actually one layer thin, but yeah, it really is.
Delicate.
You know, like, let's think about this. So how does chemo work? Everybody's heard of chemo. Chemo kills fast growing cells. Cancer is a fast growing cell. Guess what? Everybody who does chemo loses. They lose their gut function and they lose their hair. Why? Because the fastest growing cells naturally in your body are your gut and your hair. And so your gut is constantly replacing its cells, that one little layer of cells, all the time, like every 3 to 7 days. It is very delicate and it's replaced on a regular basis. When those replacement happens, it needs to stay. You need to keep your faculty to be shut and then open. If your body can't control the tight junctions, and if there's other things like mucus membrane issues or whatnot, we can go deeper into it. Then you get chronic leaky gut or chronic intestinal permeability, and you have toxins, bacteria, LPS, undigested, improperly digested food particles. Each one of these things sets the immune system off. It's like pissed. It's like, what are you doing here? This is a party for only the right size molecules, and you're not the right size. So
right. We
do discriminate here, and you're out. And yeah. And it causes.
Okay, no, we're selective.
Okay.
Yeah, I gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah.
So but it gets really pissed, and it has to detoxify that. And people get lost in this, like, oh, that's simple. No, actually, it's very complex, and it's mostly immune related for the detoxification, because your immune cells are the ones that are tagging these as bad. And then the detoxification process happens after that. And just the act of having to do extra detoxifying or inerting or, you know, neutralizing of these incoming particles creates more cytokines. And everyone's heard of cytokines now, and they're basically just more signals of inflammation. And if you have enough of these, they damage surrounding healthy tissues. And if that happens, it causes more inflammation. And then that just naturally goes systemic. It just starts floating around the body. It's not self-contained. There's not just one little area right there that you can contain all the inflammation in. And so it starts this really nasty process of your body trying to keep you alive, trying to keep the right things coming in and the bad things out. And then when the bad things do get in, it wants to, you know, tag them, get them out through the kidneys and the liver, get them out through the poop and your pee. But the action of doing that is resource intensive and causes further inflammation. Now, if it stops, like if it just stops after a week or two, you're probably just fine. But if it continues and continues and continues, that's when we get this chronic leaky gut syndrome or chronic intestinal permeability. And then it sets off a chain reaction of issues.
How can someone test, like, what are some of the symptoms, and how can someone test if they have leaky gut or intestinal permeability? And I see we have a couple of questions. Thanks for putting them in the Q&A box instead of the chat. I appreciate that. Clarissa is with us today. If you have any tech issues, so put that in the chat. Otherwise, keep the Q&As in the Q&A, which I appreciate. Steve, how can we test, and what are the symptoms? Do symptoms first, I guess.
Okay. So symptoms are related to that process. And I love trying to just, you know, say this nice and slow and really deep, and maybe deeper than some people are ready for, because if people can start to realize how their tissues are built and how the layers of the body are built, they can really start to map their symptoms back. And I love tests. I'm actually an engineer, so I'm huge on third-party data, because we make up stories all day long about what we think's happening, but that's really important. However, some of this gut testing stuff is still rather archaic, if you will, and not always super reliable. And so if you can have early detection through symptomology and then confirmation through testing, I think that's the fastest way to figure this out. So symptoms, food sensitivities, especially if they have not been there since you were a young kid. Any new randomly changing food sensitivities is a high correlation with leaky gut, if not like basically definitive. I would say any autoimmune conditions is a high risk factor. We'll go into that in a little bit here on how that relates. But basically, if you have especially stuff related to the joints, related to the skin, if you're not diagnosed yet, but you are having random rashes, you got this thing under your eyes, you got this thing in the back of your head, your elbows, you got these various places that are like, oh yeah, I just cover that up. It happens a few times a year. That's probably related to a leaky gut and stress in certain times of the year. And it's probably autoimmune related. Random sort of things like brain fog after eating certain foods, any sort of chronic ongoing inflammation that you've been trying to work out. You've been taking your curcumin, you've been taking your steroids or your anti-inflammatories, and you're like, I don't know why I'm constantly inflamed. Well, this is probably the number one source of just generalized inflammation that people fail to test for.
Okay. So how can we test?
So they have permeability tests. So there's lactulose tests. So you can just, you know, Google leaky gut tests and get one of those tests. They're all, you know, fairly the same. Some of them are not super pleasant to do, but it's lactulose mannitol test is the gold standard. However, if you do a food sensitivity panel and you've already done that, you haven't done the lactulose, but your food sensitivity panel shows like you're sensitive to like 500 things out of 600 or even 20 out of 100, that's pretty much confirming. Like, you know, most people shouldn't be reactive to strawberries, watermelon, kale, chicken. Like these are very, very innocuous foods. They're high in nutrients, low inflammatory factors. So if you're reacting to normal foods, that's pretty much confirmation as well.
Okay.
Cyrex has some advanced tests as well. They're really expensive and hard to get. I've done them. They're cool. I don't know that they're any more beneficial than just doing a regular test though.
I wonder which labs do that. Say it again, the name of the, it's a lactulose.
Mannitol test,
which is interesting because you're using lactulose for the SIBO breath test as well. So call your labs, just Google it. But I'm sure some of these labs will, is it a breath test, Steve?
No, I haven't looked in this in a long time. So I might be misspeaking, right. But no, it's basically you're checking for absorption and then you're checking in the urine how much you excrete.
Okay. Oh, that's so interesting. Okay. So that's okay. And then how long does it take? Because that's really interesting. And of course, everyone wants to know. And then how do we fix leaky gut? And someone's asking, are you talking about the large intestine or both the large and small intestine? And does what you're explaining, by the way, fantastic, yes, also relate to SIBO? What I will say about that is that people with SIBO tend to have leaky gut, and it does cause leaky gut. I don't think leaky gut causes SIBO, but I'm not a medical professional. This is my observation based on the information I have, but definitely SIBO can cause leaky gut. And what I've figured out is just like, think about it. It's this tube, these are your tight junctions, right? And it's constantly full of air from that bloating. It would make sense that those little balloons, you know, that they would separate. That's my very non-scientific approach to why SIBO causes leaky gut. I have no idea if that's right, Steve. But anyway.
I'll give you a more scientific idea.
Thank you. Yeah.
And we're talking about primarily, I would say like 70% small intestine, 30% large intestine. It can happen in both intestines. There's less data on the large intestine. It's even harder to kind of figure out. And if it is starting in one area, is it spreading all the way down? I don't know that anybody has any of the data on that. If it's just one patch or if it's the entire thing. So therefore it's a struggle at the moment. Like I said, gut testing, I know there's been a massive explosion over the last 10 years, even the last 3 years, and it's all very medieval at this point. We are just trying to figure this out.
Yeah, it's new.
So that's why I say, if you can understand your body and the architecture of your body, then you can relate that to symptoms. And then you can use data of what we do have to begin to help you correlate all those things. So how would SIBO cause leaky gut? Number one, SIBO is going to be in the small intestine. It is going to be throwing off extra LPS. It's going to be throwing off extra just metabolites from that bacteria. And those metabolites are toxic. They should be tagged mostly by various gut defensins and excreted. However, they're bouncing around in there. And that bouncing, if you don't have a strong mucous membrane, will end up coming in contact with the gut barrier, with the actual line of cells there. And so it creates just a more inflammatory environment and more stuff for the gut to tag and get rid of, and also raises the probability of these toxins getting into the gut. And so raising the inflammation. And as I said, it is so simple and yet so complex that more inflammation does cause more destruction to those tissues. And then that destruction caused more destruction and it becomes this little snowball. And so it is that simple, but it also, the process of which it all unfolds and the chaoticness of it is highly complex.
Michael's asking what determines you have leaky gut or something over SIBO or IBS. It's just, hey Michael, how you doing? It's so, they're like cousins. They're brothers and sisters, right? They're all just so closely related. What about zonulin for the testing? And what's LPS, Steve?
So Zonulin or LPS, which one are we talking
about? Do LPS first, because okay, people were wondering what you were just talking about. Sorry.
Lipopolysaccharides. So these are components of cell walls, usually bacteria cell walls, that are highly inflammatory, highly toxic. They are normally occurring both in our saliva as well as in our foods, but there is a threshold. And when the body passes its threshold and its ability to neutralize and get rid of, then it starts to cause a cascade. If you want to know what happens if you get full LPS destruction, it's called sepsis, and sepsis is deadly. So that's what happens at the hospital when you're usually like elderly or have a lot of issues. So LPS is part of that inflammatory cascade. Enough LPS causes total destruction.
Died of that in the hospital. My brother-in-law died of sepsis in the hospital after surgery.
I'm sorry
tragic.
To hear that.
Absolutely tragic. Yes. Anyway. So now let's talk about Zonulin. And that's from Stephanie. Hey, Stephanie. So what is the Zonulin test? Because that does get thrown about a bit, a lot.
Yeah. I forgot about the Zonulin markers. That's a new, whole new thing of tracking the tight junction expression. So Zonulin is a tight junction protein. It's a, remember I said that the cells are supposed to be able to open and close. The best way to think about this, I like, is rubber bands. And so Zonulin is the number one, like the strongest rubber band. There's other rubber bands called Cludin and Cladin, I think. There's three of them. Mm-hmm. But Zonulin's the biggest and the strongest and the most well-studied. And so these rubber bands are supposed to be tight, right? Just like a brand new rubber band out of a package. But if you play with those rubber bands, just like when you were a kid, they get more and more laxity, more and more laxity. And so part of having leaky gut is getting laxity in those tight junctions. And then slowly you're not able to keep the tension to keep the cells together. And so Zonulin is this protein. You can do certain tests to measure if it's under or overexpressed, I believe. And again, it's like most things in the body. We don't want too much. We don't want too little.
Okay. Do you think that the oat test important here? The organic acids test?
Depending on if you get the infection markers, it can give you like snapshots of SIBO overgrowth or Candida overgrowth. I think the oat test,
it's interesting.
It's interesting. It helps you paint the whole picture, right?
Right. It's
not going to give you a Zonulin marker that I'm aware of. It's not going to give you a marker that specifically says this is intestinal permeability.
And we actually in SIBO land would not say that it would, I mean, it isn't a SIBO test. So don't think it's a SIBO test, you guys. It may give you like some additional interesting information to Steve's point. And if you are getting the organic acid test, make sure you're going to someone who knows how to read that sucker, because Dr. Dan Kalish, who I know you studied with, is a true expert on it. But not everybody has been trained by him, and not everybody is an idiot. That's not what I'm saying, but I'm just saying you really want to find out what every single one of those markers means. Okay, moving on, because it's a ton of information. So how do you fix this? Let's get to the solution, my favorite part.
Well, you know, fixing anything is unraveling why it happened. You know, we're doing a forensic analysis here. What, CSI. You know, CSI of the gut. You know, how did this start? Did it start, you know, when did the symptoms change basically for you? Did it start after a car crash? Did it start when you got fired? Did it start with a bad fight with your spouse? Did it start after a trip to Mexico? All of these things are very important CSI clues to what could be the cause of it. Did it start perimenopause? All these things. And so let's step back to one important thing. So one important thing we don't talk enough about is the mucous membrane. So there is the cells, and there's the mechanisms of how the cells and the tight junctions work and what happens and the inflammation and the immune system. But between all the chaoticness, the LPS and the undigested food and the properly digested food and everything that's happening, even SIBO, there is this really tight and powerful mucous membrane that protects this one layer of cells. And all of these particles have to go through that membrane in order to get into contact with your little gut cells. And the reason is very important because those little gut cells are very fragile and very thin. And that mucous membrane is very thick and it has various layers of thickness throughout it. If that gets thinned out, then just eating normal foods, which is how you can get a food sensitivity test, like watermelon, strawberries, kale, chicken, everything you're eating, you're like, I ate that for breakfast and now it's on this test. How is that even possible? It's because right. your mucous membrane is not able to filter for you anymore. And so asking these questions about what changed, mucous membrane is highly important for hormones. So if you're in a hormonal state, if it's that time of the month or perimenopause, or a guy has really low testosterone, low cortisol, things like this. Well, cortisol is the number one thinner of the membranes, whether it's too high or too low. And so we got to look at that because the mucous membrane is super important. And then we need to look at just generally what is happening. Are you exposing your body to a lot of toxins? Are you eating a Western diet? Are you eating just nonstop dairy and eggs and your body can't tolerate that right now? Do you have a SIBO or a yeast overgrowth in the small intestine that's just kicking off toxins all day long, a parasite of some point in the stomach or somewhere else? All these things are basically creating more pressure to break the tight junctions.
Right.
And so unraveling that is the way forward to a healthy gut barrier.
Okay. Anonymous attendee, I have IBSD. What can help me? That's a huge concept, and we'll try to touch on that. But so IBSD. So do you have SIBO? Have you tested for SIBO? Is my question. Are you in the Facebook group SIBO SOS community? Lots of people can help you with that specifically. This is interesting from Ivor, and many people with intestinal permeability also have mast cell activation, which we just did two amazing masterclasses on, and reacts strongly to plant herb-based supplements, which therefore make things worse. Are there other approaches that don't depend on substances made from plants or herbs that are effective? Thank you.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Where are the mast cells located? They're located in those little cells, the one layer thick cells behind the giant, you know, super awesome, maybe it's Wonder Woman's, maybe it's Superman and Wonder Woman together fighting off and keeping the food away from the mast cells. If you collapse that mucous membrane, then you're giving the mast cells every opportunity to react with more histamine. So one step is increasing mucous membrane. The other step is reducing histamine and leaky gut. So as this person stated, obviously they're very intelligent and have been tracking this stuff for a long time. In the past, like 7, 8, 10 years ago, or this whole time, a lot of the supplements and the healing protocols were around helping to express tight junctions and close those down. And so, or just helping to give anti-inflammatories and get the little gut cells going. So that included things like L-glutamine or every company except for ours has most professional grade companies have a gut powder. They have a leaky gut powder. Many doctors have these leaky gut powders. This was the first generation of gut healing because there is scientific data that some of these plant compounds do help express tight junctions. And we do know that other plant compounds like quercetin and stuff can help slow down histamine reactions. And so they started just saying, well, if we throw all these traditionally gut healthy plant compounds into a powder, and then we dump L-glutamine in there, which preferentially helps the small intestinal cells basically power back up and replicate better and heal, then we're going to heal this leaky gut thing. And so that's what we did for, 6, 10 years. And it wasn't bad, but it wasn't very efficient either. And some people needed one scoop. Some people needed 8 scoops. Nobody knew which one. Some people reacted right away with bloating. Some people never got better. And so the next generation of leaky gut healing, in my opinion, are protocols that are focused on the mucous membrane, as well as the tight junctions, as well as the mast cells. And that sort of, I kind of lumped the mast cells in with the immune reaction cascade. And so that's where the new and better way to heal leaky gut is through tributarin and tributarin specific products, because We know from the research that it does a few things. One, it relaxes the mast cells. Two, it increases mucus production. And three, it increases zonulin and tight junction production. And it has a whole host of other beneficial effects. And so that's where Tributarin X, the product we make. There's also other products like sunbutyrate from Pure Encapsulations that I find like pretty good. If you want a liquid and you want blueberry flavors, that is the way, because now we're reducing the amount of incoming potential inflammatory agents, because some people can't tolerate certain things. You know, not everybody can tolerate L-glutamine. Not everybody can tolerate some of the herbs in the formulas. And so we're also able to just really quickly see if that makes an impact or not. It makes the dosing easier. It makes everything easier. And so that I think is the future. And that's what I've seen over the last 2 years, is that Tributarin X is really quite magical and impressive. Now, it doesn't work for everybody. Only works for like 95% of people, but that's pretty good outcomes. Yeah. And so
how does that molecule work? You may have never even heard of like Tributarin before, guys. Actually, I hadn't until I was talking to Steve about what was going on with his product line. He's like, I'm really excited about this for leaky gut. I'm like, what? So talk to us about that molecule, if you would.
Yeah. So it's a naturally occurring molecule in your body. That molecule is not, but the byproduct of it, which is butyric acid, is. And so in your microbiome, in case you're not familiar yet. I really learned a lot in the last few years about like location. I really like to talk about the location in the body, because I think I've missed that for like almost 10 years of my career. But the bottom of your small intestine into the top of your large intestine, so the connection area down there, that's where your microbiome is, the majority of it being in the large intestine. And in that area, there's a big transition from oxygen and pH levels. And basically what's happening is you're transitioning into a low oxygen state, so that the anaerobic bacteria can live and build this healthy microbiome, because most of those good bugs that we want there they need a low oxygen environment. And in order to keep that area low in oxygen, the cells, as they go into the colon, into the large intestine, they preferentially transition away from glutamine and glucose into preferring butyrate for their metabolism. And when they do that, they suck oxygen out of that microbiome area, which is how the oxygen level drops and it stays low. And this causes a flourishing of certain bugs. So butyric acid is like the magnesium of the gut. It's the most important molecule, in my opinion, of the gut. And it also goes systemic. It's found in brain research. It's found in allergy research, asthma research, osteoporosis research. We see a dropping of butyrate levels and a worsening of outcomes in all of these conditions. It's really, really quite cool how they say like 90 to 95% of it's consumed in the gut, and the other 5 to 10% goes systemic and does really cool things to the rest of the body. So tributarin is butyric acid times three, basically. It's three of them all tied together with a little fat backbone. And so tributarin then needs a little lipase to be broken into the actual butyric acid. What this does is it makes it slowly absorbed down your entire digestive tract versus the other preparations of butyric acid, one of which is sodium butyrate. It's the most well-studied and has a long history of use in humans over the last 10 years. However, the salt bond to it causes it to get absorbed immediately as soon as it hits the small intestine. And that's because when it comes to salt, especially, your body doesn't need any processing. It works across a gradient. And so it just sucks up salt right away. And so that kind of, it's not bad. There's a bunch of, like I said, data on sodium butyrate that's highly, really good for health. It just doesn't totally coat the intestinal tract like we're hoping to do, because like I said earlier, we don't know where your leaky gut is. We don't know if it's the whole thing. We don't know if it's a patch. We don't know if it's in the top or the bottom. And so that's where tributarin is a pretty big leap forward in the innovation of butyric acid supplements.
Okay. And Clarissa has put the link in the chat. Michael was asking for a special coupon that, you know, I wrestle all of my friends who have products that I love and care about, I arm wrestle them and I win, and because I ask them to please give my community a special discount. And so that's how we're able to pass on just tons of great things with great discounts. So it's in the chat if you'd like to order some and try it. Let's say someone buys this, Steve, how do, as I know hundreds and thousands of people have, but how do they use it? And who is it not for?
I guess it wouldn't be for you if you have alpha gal, because it does have a little bit of, that's
alpha gal.
Alpha gal is this really crazy, nasty reaction you get where you can't tolerate any sort of animal protein anymore. It comes from the ticks. It's spreading. It's like a really bad innovation that Lyme disease is causing, in humans. It's a small part of the population, but as Lyme disease is spreading, the ticks aren't being killed due to the lack of freezing temperatures and blah, blah, blah. It's actually spreading. It's kind of crazy, but that growing population is very small at the moment, 1 or 2% of people that are in the chronic wellness space. But if you can't tolerate animal products, there's just a small amount of pectin from non-GMO European beef in there needed for the coating. Other than that, unless you're... unless you're like stuck on enemas or something, you might need to go slow, but there's really no other major contraindications with it. It does help slow down motility. So those who are on the loose side, it's way easier to dose and way faster basically to find the right dose. Those on the constipated side, it can be you have to go a lot slower, like one pill every 3 days and work your way up. But as your body starts to heal with the constipation, people, they seem to have like a pretty amazing breakthrough around week 8 to 10.
Nice. Karen, for those who can't tolerate sorbitol, would your company consider formulating tributyrin X without it?
So I would actually bet you a whole bottle of tributyrin X, which is like $70 or something, that you can tolerate this product, even if you have a strong reaction to sorbitol. I knew everybody would be pissed about the sorbitol. Like I delayed the product launch for 6 months, searching the earth for a different capsule that was actual enteric capsulation. People want to
show us the capsule.
Yeah.
This is important.
So it's like really tiny.
It's a gel cap.
Yeah. It's a really tiny little capsule. So the amount in this is like the amount in like a berry or something. So sorbitol is non-toxic. Number one, it is number two found in nature. And therefore I believe the body has the ability to actually break it down. A diet of totally sorbitol free is usually very unlikely, even if you are doing FODMAPs. And so my only point being that people see increased FODMAP tolerance by just taking the product. There's something that it's doing around healing the membranes, healing of the leaky gut, healing of the processing of sorbitol that sort of negates the sorbitol in the capsule. The other thing is I searched the earth for a vegan non-sorbitol enteric capsule, which I believe is critical to the actual execution of the product to get the results. And there's nothing out there. Like there is things out there, but we have to go with like really chemicals basically to replace sorbitol. And so there's no natural occurring replacement for sorbitol in enteric capsules yet. If you're watching this and you happen to be an enteric capsule specialist, or you've gone down that rabbit hole, please, you know, feel free to send me an email. I'm always open to making the products better. It's just that I'd rather choose a natural occurring small amount of something that I know people are afraid of, and it can cause some people harm in higher dosages, and use a very small amount of it and have a safer product, in my opinion.
Hey, Denise, will this help IBSD on low FODMAP? It should. It really should. Let's say someone tries it and they're like, how long do I have to do this for? But you just said 8 to 10 weeks is like this magic, like a big transition happens there.
Yeah.
So
most people notice it within 2 to 3 weeks. It's the people that are super, super constipated who are already really tough cases. They're the people that it takes longer.
Okay. So Wendy, I feel like that kind of answers your question about how long do you have to take it in order to repair your leaky gut? So you don't have to take it after that, right, Steve?
I would if you do get a resolution or improvement in your symptoms, I would stay on it for a month or so, a month or two, just to solidify those gains. You want to lock those gains in and let your body remodel around them. what it should do quickly in that as soon as the, you know, week 8 to 12 or something, when the gains are really locked in, is when that's when you start adding in your prebiotics. That's when you add in your greens powders, your polyphenols, you increase your diet. So once you start once you start eating actual fermentable foods again, or prebiotics again, that's when you're giving the body the what it needs to actually make its own butyrate. And so once you make that leap, then you can start weaning off the tributyrin right away, probably. That's the goal. That's my goal for everybody.
Yeah. What's DFH tributyrin X? What's DFH?
Designs for Health. They have a Designs for Health tributyrin product. It's not tributyrin X. Yeah, their product, unfortunately, is it is a soft gel, but it's a powder inside of there. And the powder, it's only 30% by weight, and it has a 70% carriers. And so I don't find those carriers to be something I would put in my body. So you can reach out to that company and ask them about the details. I'm not going to really talk bad about it, but
it's just not
I wanted.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Hey, Davey, I'm doing Sinclair Canale's rapid gut reset protocol. Can I take Holozymes at the same time? That's a great question. She and I are texting back and forth. She's traveling today, I think. But I know they have a Q&A area in the course, so you could ask them. I know Sinclair is really big on enzymes and very picky about ingredients. So I think she'd probably be really thrilled. I don't want to speak for her though. But I would definitely ask her. And Holozyme is the digestive enzyme that Steve has created. Now, ever since I've known Steve up until like this past little time period, he and I have talked about like making products, and he's always like, I never want to make a supplement. I don't want to do it. Like this is a guy who has been resistant to this, and he just dragged himself in it because he really saw that things weren't moving fast enough in the area of gut supplements. And if you can't afford it, someone's like, well, I can't afford it. Okay. That's cool. You don't have to. I hope just that this is inspiring you to, and also educating you about a condition. So that's it. That's no pressure.
Yeah. I mean, if here's a leaky gut option for those who can't afford this, but can tolerate L-glutamine. It's not going to fix the mucous membranes though. So just realize that this is going to support the cells and the tight junctions, but it won't take care of the mucous membranes. So you're still going to have to find something to figure that out. And that's high dose L-glutamine. You can get a tub of L-glutamine for like 10 bucks, 15 bucks, something like that. But you got to use a high enough dosage. Like you got to use 20 to 40 grams a day for a long time. That's, you know, for like a month or so. So there's a article on our website, healthygut.com, with L-glutamine dosage. And it has protocol there that came from other people that I've worked with. And I tried the protocol myself. But if you have any neurologic issues with the first scoop of L-glutamine, then stop right there because you have a glutamate conversion issue. And it's not right for you. Again, L-glutamine was often used along the way. I've used it. Like I said, I just said I used it. It helped me back in the day, but it didn't take care of certain aspects of it. And that's because it's only working on one. It doesn't help with microbiome diversity. It doesn't help with lowering inflammation. It doesn't help with the mast cells, and it doesn't help with the mucous membranes.
Okay. But that it's a place to get started for sure.
Yeah.
Would you recommend tributyrin X for someone with SIBO?
Yeah, we have the majority of our people are either mast cell people or SIBO people. That's not a contraindication.
Antoinetta, go. So Steve, let's say you have to do all the 20 grams of L-glutamine. Do you do it like, can you spread it out over the day? Or do I?
I think the thing on our website is like,
check out the website.
Yeah, I think it's AM and PM dosages or three times a day, something like that. But basically in burn units, the research in humans and burn units, they go up to 80 to 120 grams a day. And most people are way underdosing L-glutamine. So that's why a lot of the powders I don't think work.
How is this for Crohn's, UC? And I have microscopic colitis. Lisa, how is tributyrin for that? This is not medical advice. So this is just stuff for you guys to consider.
Yeah, it just helps with the structure and function of your intestines. So it's not a treatment for any disease. It's not a preventative for any disease. We do have people that have those issues that use the product and like it a lot, and it helps them with their symptoms. And if you back out the physiology about why it's working and the underlying disease structure, you could see how it might be beneficial in the long run for you. But it's not, you know, you can't compare it to a biologic or something like that. It's not even close to that. Otherwise it'd be a drug and we wouldn't be able to talk about it.
Yeah. And Ivor's asking, what are the added flavorings? Do you have a line in the ingredient deck for added flavorings?
No, they're looking at the wrong product.
Okay.
Ivor, we don't have any flavorings.
Okay. Can you take it if you have a lot of candida? Hey, Roderick.
Yes. Yep.
Yep. Okay. Somebody's asked, what is SIBO? Forgive me. I apologize. SIBO is small intestine bacterial overgrowth. It is, I'm going to really shorten a bunch of information. It's IBS. Okay. So, and it can be caused by everything from food poisoning to adhesions to traumatic brain injury and on and on and on. So come join us at the SIBO SOS Facebook group where we are streaming less live. Get my book, Healing SIBO. That's just the tip of the iceberg. But there you go. Let's see. Ivor's saying it's in the table that compares butyric acid products. Maybe that's on your site, Steve. Well, his doesn't have the flavoring added to it.
Yeah, sorry if that reads incorrectly, but we don't have any flavorings. So
I wanted to talk about Lynn C's question. I have a problem in controlling urge to evacuate soon after a meal, even when I'm on a healthy diet, plant-based food. What remedy would you suggest? Thanks. When you hear that, Steve, like what instantly goes off in your head about like something else is going on there?
Yeah, my initial issue is motility. There's a motility issue. It's going too fast, basically, and you don't have control. And so what are the factors that make things go too fast? Well, low stomach acid, poor digestive enzyme function, a messed up intestinal function, like too fast. And so that's where I would start, either top down or bottom up, to try to just, you know, look at the physiology and see if you can't support it. We have no family history. We have no idea what the person's taking or what they consider a good diet, but it doesn't actually matter. Usually it's still the same underlying organs. The stomach acid has to be high enough or strong enough, excuse me. It has to be powerful enough. Your enzyme function has to be powerful enough. Otherwise you just create a cascade of inflammatory like substances or toxic like issues due to unbroken down foods. And your body's like, get it out of me. I can't deal with this. That's going to happen. So,
and our heart goes out to you because that's a nightmare, big time. Get to a good motility specialist, seriously. Anonymous, if you have leaky gut, do you think if we get COVID, the virus can get into our bloodstream more easily and give us a much worse case?
I don't know enough to totally answer that, but that's not my understanding of how the virus actually enters the body. I believe it enters through certain receptors in actual gut cells themselves. So I don't know that that would actually, in other words, I don't know that the virus would actually want to do that, because it might be counter to the way the virus actually wants to live.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. Here we go. I've read that food sensitivity tests based on IgG are not very reliable. Do you think they are useful?
Yeah, you got to think about, like, I mean, everybody should think about this. It's happening. It's a fractal, right? How do you trust me? How do you trust Siobhan? How do you trust your news sites? You have to figure out how to rank stack sources of information and what that tells you. If you're looking for a law of gut testing that you should do this or not do this, and you're looking that for that in the world right now, this party, that party, this news source, that source, it's not there. There's no longer black and white. It's all gray. And so food sensitivity testing it just helps with the color in the gray zone. So if you're a little confused, you're not sure which diet, you've tried like five of them, and you're like, I just need a little bit more to help me, then doing a test like that can help you remove some current in this moment issues for you. And let's say they're not, it probably is not a bad deal to just remove them for 8 weeks. Or let's say you're like, I just don't think I have leaky gut. I mean, I have all the symptoms, but I don't have leaky gut. So I want to confirm I do. And so you want to get a lactulose mannitol test, or you want to get a food sensitivity test. You lay those two over top of the fact that you have all the symptoms. Now you have the confirmation from the third party for you to actually change your life and handle this issue. It's not you know, all this stuff, whether it's microbiome testing, SIBO testing, actually SIBO testing is getting really good, but it's a much simpler idea than trying to measure a lot of these other ideas. And so it's all gray, and we have to use your history, your symptoms, and then the test results to kind of like just give us a better color scale of where you should work. I don't think just bashing the test is a good idea, but also just relying on it, like that's the only thing that matters, is insane as well.
Right. And Raquel, yes, if you guys have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, yes, you can use tributyrin X with it. Yes is the answer to that.
It normally helps people.
Exactly. And if you start taking tributyrin X, did you say not to take any probiotics at the same time, Steve? I don't think you said
that. No, I never said that. You can take probiotics right along with it.
Okay, cool. And I did that one. Awesome sauce. Okay. Denise, I've apparently had SIBO this whole time, leaky gut, and I've had issues all my life. I'm so sorry. I don't have insurance plan and live in a small town in British Columbia, Canada. It would be really helpful if a list could be made available to a person like me so I can try to get the supplements that would help me. Well, that's what Facebook groups are for. That's go to the Facebook group that Clarissa has put in the chat. And also there are leaky gut Facebook groups too. So ours is primarily focused on small intestine bacterial overgrowth. We certainly touch on leaky gut because it's so closely related, but Denise, I think you can find a lot of support there, and it's free, right? Use your discernment, like Steve's been talking about. Like, not everything that's on the internet is true. All right. Better tests checking for leaky gut. We've talked about that. CDSA by Genova or other stool tests. I mean, I think you just answered that, really, Steve. Did you want to touch on that real quick? And then I want to get to the 8 other questions. And then.
Yeah, again, stool tests, CDSAs, they are not the gold standard.
What's a CDSA? I don't even know what that is.
Comprehensive diagnostic. Oh. Stool and parasite analysis, or whatever that word is, I forget it. Stool testing is great. I highly recommend it if you have the optionality and the finances to pull it off. I actually recommend you run 2 side by side from the same stool sample. I've been doing that for years, and I did that with over 300 people, and I found that each company finds different things. So it hasn't changed. And so it's just more gray color scales, or if we don't want to talk about the grayscale, we can talk about something else, but it is not the gold standard for leaky gut. It is the gold standard for trying to find parasites. So it's not the gold standard for SIBO.
Right. Right. And even then, for parasite testing, you really need to make sure you're going to a very good stool testing company, because not everybody looks as extensively as they think they could. Okay. Elizabeth, I read that a theory that leaky gut occurs during pregnancy to transfer our microbes to our growing fetus. Have you heard of this?
I would not doubt that it does actually happen during pregnancy. I'll have to look into that a little bit more, but due to the hormonal changes during pregnancy, there's the immune, you're actually trying to turn off your immune system so you don't kill the baby technically. Due to all the immune and hormone changes, I would not doubt if the gut does get a little leaky during, but I don't believe it has anything to do with transferring microbes. The sac, I forget the name of it right now, that the baby's in is like super sterile. Nothing's going in there as far as microbes go.
With vaginal births, that's where they're getting so much of the—
Right, they inhale it and they eat it on the way out, and that's—
Yeah, right.
That's work.
And okay, I have SIBO and EMO on overdrive, and EMO is a form of SIBO, since my only pregnancy, and 3 years later, I'm worse than ever. While it's possible I had SIBO prior to pregnancy, the fact that I've been such a mess after giving birth is incredibly perplexing. I have a question. Also, I breastfed for a year, and there was an obvious lessening of reactions to alcohol and wine after I stopped. Meaning the skin blotchiness. But I doubt you weren't— it kind of makes it sound like you were drinking while you were breastfeeding, and I'm sure that wasn't the case. So
here's something really common that you don't see unless you're a practitioner of some type. You see women who are having digestive issues that they might consider very mild and not disruptive to their lives, get pregnant and like just go wild. They're like, I can eat ice cream again, and I don't even hardly fart. Everything that was a a trigger food or a problem food, like, kind of goes away during pregnancy. Why? Because the hormones correct into these super levels that are amazing. And like that's why women are glowing. That's why you're making babies. Like, everything is like souped up. That all has an energy cost, right? All that power, all those hormones, all that stuff went right into the baby, which is what we want, but that also depletes the mother. And so what if up here is where they were with mild digestive issues and mild hormone disruption and mild immune dysregulation, they make the baby, so they're feeling really good. You're going to drop even lower, and your new baseline after baby is going to be much lower. And this is highly common if you take family of history and like a bunch of people through somebody that has like gut issues, you find this pattern very, very common.
Also, I don't know, you know, like if you had to take antibiotics when you were in the hospital, I don't know if that's the case or not, but that can also be, you know, that was your 15th round from when you were a kid and all, like they can be contributing factors to creating SIBO.
Yeah. So anyways, it's hormone, it's gut and immune system related.
Do you know anything about the FUT2 genetic variant, which means a thinner mucous membrane?
Sean Bean and I are talking about that offline. I don't know enough to even begin. Okay. Sean Bean's the guy to follow for that.
How do you spell his name?
Shawnbean.
Okay, cool. Should supplements for leaky gut healing be taken during EMO SIBO eradication treatment? We've already talked about that. It's fine.
Yes.
Catherine, I have a friend who did a course of antibiotics a few years ago and seems to have constant breakouts of red sores on his face since. He believes the antibiotics are the cause, and leaky gut has been mentioned as a possible cause of the skin blotches. What is the best approach to this and understanding food elimination diet as a first action? Remove dairy. If so, how long can you remove the food for determine its cause? Cabbage juice has also been said to be a good gut healer. Catherine, it sounds like you guys are on the beginning of a wonderful journey. And I definitely want to hear what Steve has to say, but yes, I'm glad you're realizing this, or your friend, the skin gut matrix. Go ahead, Steve, the microbiome.
Yeah, they're highly correlated, but it's not just one. You're looking for, it sounds like you're looking for one cause. You're not going to find it. You're going to find multiple causes probably. And so yes, an elimination diet will probably help. Please don't stay on it longer than 8 to 12 weeks. There's suggestion that you start to create an even more dysbiotic microbiome at that point. And so that's why you want to focus on gut function while you're doing the elimination diet. And then the last step after you confirm, you know, you've eliminated the normal toxins, you know, wheats and grains and seed oils and sugar and things like that. And you're kind of there, you've ruled out low stomach acid, low enzyme function, low butyrate, then you should be in a pretty good spot. And then it's just dialing in the hormones and the immune system. And so that's where something like Holoimmune or other immune modulating things that sort of dampen the TH1, TH2 imbalance that might be happening.
Hey, Elizabeth is just, get into the Q&A box, Elizabeth, because that will help us. And it's your first webinar. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here. So Elizabeth is the one who had the baby and, you know, was talking about the wine and stuff. So clarity. Thank you, Elizabeth. No antibiotics at all. So no antibiotics during or after birth. That's awesome. I exclusively pumped so baby wasn't getting milk after having a drink. Right. Got that. So, right. But one glass of wine and I'm covered with red blotches. That stopped when I stopped pumping. Sorry, this is my first webinar. No problem. So I broke my own rule and went into the chat. Bring your questions to the Q&A box. So when I hear that, Steve, I just think histamines, and someone's also asking what are mast cells. So if you can illuminate on that, it'd be great. And then we'll wrap up within the next 5 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, blotchiness after red wine or strawberries or anything sort of high histamine food pretty much says histamine reaction. So I'd focus in on that, go a little deeper on that. Histamine is mostly released from mast cells, or it might be totally exclusively. I got to figure that out. I think it's almost exclusively released from mast cells. Mast cells are these little, they're part of the immune system, in my opinion. And they sort of hold your histamine and they release it in proportion to what's happening in your environment. We don't want no histamine. We want the right amount of histamine because histamine actually helps create stomach acid, for instance. So if you take every antihistamine in the world and you try to suppress your histamine right into the ground, you could be accidentally suppressing your stomach acid production. So we want a balance. The whole body's gray zones, and we want to be in, you know, in between white and black. We want to be in the gray zone for everything, and that's histamine as well.
Mahona says that breath smells of hydrogen sulfide rotten eggs. What should I do to tackle this? Have you had a hydrogen sulfide breath test for SIBO through Gemelli Labs called Trio Smart? That is my first suggestion, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. Just confirm what it is and then get on the correct protocol from your provider. I know there's Dr. Allison Seebecker protocols for that exact thing.
That's right. Healing SIBO, my book covers it. The course SIBO Recovery Roadmap. You got a lot of people in the SIBO SOS Facebook group can help it too. What's the difference between Holozyme and Tributarin X?
One is digestive enzymes and one is a butyric acid supplement. So enzymes help break down your food into the right size molecules. And that way you can help absorb and get all the nutrients from your food and not accidentally feed your SIBO or candida or something like that. And then butyric acid is what we talked about earlier. So if you can watch the replay, I talked all about that.
Yep. And Heather, yes, you can take it during. We a lot of people have asked that. What is Tributarin X and Holozyme? So you just kind of touched on that. Tributarin X is what the supplement that we've been talking about to help heal your intestinal lining and your mucous membrane and tighten the spaces between your cells and the intestine, leaky gut. This is one of the things to resolve and help with leaky gut. And then Holozymes are the digestive enzymes that Steve wanted to create to fill in the gap of other digestive enzymes that he had been trying and using for years. I'm really telling his story. And he found a guy who had patented a certain way and formulation, and then he's brought it to market. And they're incredibly effective for so many people. Is that accurate, Steve?
Yeah, yeah. We have all three levels of enzymes. So you can look at the back of certain products and you'll see pancreatic enzymes, you'll see brush water enzymes, and you'll see microbiome enzymes. Most of the time you have to take multiple of those products to get that in one package. And then also we have this patent around mineral cofactors. If your enzyme is vegetarian based, like ours is, you need a mineral to turn on the enzyme, which is why some meals it works and other meals it doesn't. This just drove me insane for many years until I found this PhD who spent his life in Petri dishes trying to figure this out. So that's our solution. And it's been life-changing for me and many of our customers.
Todd, I just want to answer your question really quickly. I have severe constipation. My GI doc just recommended Miralax. I'm hesitant because long-term use of this can cause a lazy colon and even more motility issues. Right on. Am I accurate with this? And what else is out there is much more natural. I just want to say that Miralax, like I used to take it occasionally. It's very safe for babies. This is just like a chemical approach versus a natural approach. Some people love it and like they're fine with taking it for the rest of their lives. This is like a personal decision you have to make. I love that you're asking other questions, but it also can be a lifesaver for people. Like just depends on where you are. The natural approach I would say would be magnesium, Steve. Would you say that's right? To get the motility going?
Yeah, let's be very clear here. You should not be going more than like 4 or 5 days without pooping. And so when it comes up on that time frame, take the Miralax and get the poop out. That's I don't care how natural you want to go, you got to get it out. Otherwise, it does become an even bigger issue. After that, yeah, normally magnesium glycinate is what I recommend. I know magnesium citrate is mostly used, but I find that certain people have reactions to the citrates. So it's either one on that one. And then I would start with your stomach acid. Check for low stomach acid, because stomach acid can be the first domino in constipation. If you're holding your food too long in the stomach, it just makes the entire transit way longer. So I would focus with the magnesium, the HCL, and keep using the Miralax as you need it until you can bridge off to, you know, whatever version of motility support. And then underlying gut dysfunction, whatever's actually wrong there.
So your doctors also suggested Motegrity, which is a prokinetic, but it also can be used as a laxative, which I take daily, but I'm not getting complete evacuation. So look at your dosage for that Motegrity, which is a life-saving drug that I personally take. I say life-saving, I mean lifestyle saving. You're not running out of options. No, you're not running out of options. There are so many other options. Is there anything else out there that's less harmful? So I think, Steve, you addressed it all really well. And look at the dosage on that Motegrity, Todd, and join us in the Facebook group and post this question there, because there are a lot of other brains on that can help you.
Yeah, exact same thing. Just start with HCL Guard and magnesium.
Right on. Okay. And the other thing is that the replay is going to be mailed out. So yes, you'll be able to hear the beginning over again. And if someone is having has Holzheim's and they want to know, can I open the capsule?
Yes. Yep.
Yes. Okay. And I really have to go. So what's the difference between Holzheim and prescription digestive enzymes, which is usually the pancreatic prion?
Yeah, well, prion is been shown to treat pancreatic insufficiency. So that's, you know, Holzheim can't do that technically. So prion is all pancreatic enzymes. And that's why it's a drug for pancreatic insufficiency. We have pancreatic enzymes in our product, but we have a way less amount than what's in a prion pill. And then we also have brush border enzymes and microbiome enzymes. And so at this point in time, there is no test for us to say you're high or low in brush border enzymes or microbiome enzymes. And so I find that you can have a more targeted approach by doing just blanket approach. Like you're like, I don't know which one's causing me the issue, therefore I'm going to supplement with all of them. And hopefully the issue goes away. And that's been effective. So we do have people that use both of them at the same time as well.
Oh, interesting. Jane, you're having severe spasms in the lower abdominal. Trigger is sitting more than 15 minutes. Any thoughts? My thought is, have you gone and checked in with a pelvic floor physical therapist?
Yeah, my first thought was hands-on. Go get hands-on.
Okay. Michael's saying the links are not working right now, says server is down for maintenance. Hello, Mercury retrograde, which is happening today, which rules these things. So Steve's checking. Pop some love into the chat for Steve, if you would. Thank you, Steve. He's checking there, Michael. Thanks, Steve, for spending more time with us. We always appreciate it. We seem to have overwhelmed the server for tributyrin. The coupon will also be in the email that we send out for sure.
Yep. Yeah, it looks like we have a little bit of a link issue there. Sorry about that. I don't know that I can troubleshoot live here. So if you go to shop.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we'll figure it out and we'll email it out.
Okay.
But you can also go to, never mind.
We'll be shooting out an email with these links, but here they are. So you got the proper links, Clarissa? Okay. Or the newer, whatever. I have so much tech stuff going on today. And I was like, why did I do it on the day Mercury goes retrograde? What was I thinking?
Is that what's happening today?
Yeah. And Mercury is the planet that rules steel, like stainless steel, cars, and also communication. So you could have a conversation with someone and be like, hey, I'll see you at 3. And they were walking away and someone says, oh, when are you guys meeting? Oh, 2:30. I mean, it's like that. But the good news is that also things are revealed and answers to questions that you've had for a really long time are also revealed. So it's also, I call it ironing, like, you know, ironing your clothes, ironing the wrinkles out of information. So that's what I have found it to be. It can be a good thing. Unfinished business is another great thing for this time. Okay. I'm glad you were here, Mohana. I really am. I'm so glad you all were here. I appreciate you all being here. Thank you so much. Steve, thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Siobhan. I hope this helps everybody. If I was a little harsh today, it's because I think people need to be adults about this stuff. There is no black and white, but we do love you and we have been there.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I'm all for giving the answers out. I didn't think you were harsh. If I thought you were harsh, I'd be like, so Steve's very direct in the way that he communicates. I would have totally like softened it and just claimed it. All right. Steve, I'll talk to you later. I'm going to wrap this up, everyone. Thank you so much. We will be sending out the replay ASAP. Wendy, there's a book, Wendy, her husband has psoriasis. There's a book called The Keystone Method. Find it on Amazon. It's really a SIBO book, but it's also a phenomenally interesting book about the microbiome and staph infections and psoriasis. So lots to think about. I'm hitting this button. Love you. Bye.
Okay. Love you guys. See ya.